So welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining us. I would like to start with a simple grandmother chant, since we're going to be talking about the sacred in women's bodies and reclaiming the sacred feminine in our own bodies. You haven't talked about it in terms of the earth and the sacredness of the earth, but we don't really often translate that to our own bodies. And we've been really trained. This is a centuries-long thing that's been inculcated into the consciousness of Western people, and out of the certainly out of the Inuit, out of the Christian tradition, where in the Middle Ages there was so much flogging of the body and putting the body down, and you know all the things related to the body have been pretty much demonized. Sexuality has been demonized, and so forth, and so. But as we reclaim our connection to the earth, we also need to reclaim the sacredness of our bodies, both male and female. Even though tonight we're going to be talking specifically about women's bodies. Women are by nature closer to the earth. We're also closer to the spirit. And so spirituality is, because we're closer to the earth and because we are so the way our bodies are, we are energetically closer to spirit because we're closer to inner realms. We have more pull to inner realms, to intuition, to emotion. All of that is actually a root for connecting us to spirit, those inner realms and the intuition and even our emotions often when we learn how to work with them in a good way. So we'll be talking about reclaiming some of that tonight. Because the body is just as sacred as the earth. So I want to start with a simple Lakota chant. It's a female calling chant. It's a women's calling chant and goddess calling chant, if you will. Basically, we think of it as a grandmother calling chant. And the grandmothers to us are the sacred ancestors and the wise ones who went ahead, and also includes the great, we don't call them saints and sages, we call them the great medicine people of our past, the holy people, you know, among the ancestors, and also among the present too, the holy grandmothers that are walking on this earth. So the holy people that you might think about, the goddesses, this is also a goddess calling song. So I'm going to invite you to sing with me. It's really, really a simple chant. I'll sing it four times through. And as we do, just invite in the grandmothers, the wise grandmothers, the goddesses, the divine feminine. Just with your heart open and invite in the divine feminine. Welcome to the grandmothers, the goddesses, the great holy ones. We welcome you in. We thank you for joining us. And we ask you please to come into our little circle here tonight and bless us all. Help us to come into a deeper relationship with you, with our own bodies, with the earth, and with all creation. And I ask you please to come through me, speak through me, so that your wisdom, the wisdom of Unchimaka, you, Grandmother Earth, comes through me tonight. And I thank you. Aho, Matakriasam. Okay, so oftentimes in, boy, where do I start? There's so much to say. That within our cycles, I think I'll go back to, in our tradition, there are men's ceremonies and women's ceremonies, and there is some crossover now where women are beginning to be in men's ceremonies, and even in the women's ceremonies, oftentimes the men have a servicing, often serve that ceremony in some way. But the men's ceremonies tend to be more dramatic and outward, and the women's ceremonies tend to be more inward. And that's the honoring of the energies of the masculine and feminine. Uh-oh, are you interrupting me?
No, I think that was somebody else's mic. Keep going.
Okay. So, and that has to do with the difference of the masculine and feminine energies. We both have male and female within us, and we both have to integrate both of those things. But I'm going to be speaking specifically about women's bodies and the feminine and why those ceremonies are different and the importance of honoring those ceremonies. Because, and especially the women's ceremonies, because we've lost so much with colonialization, it was certainly Turtle Island with colonialization, and then also with just in the Western world generally, and in so much of the world now, there's been so much denigration of the feminine and denigration of women and a lifting up of the masculine. And so we've lost a lot of value. A lot of what is the feminine is devalued in the culture, and we've learned to devalue it ourselves. And even when we do value it, sometimes it's hard because we don't feel valued outside of ourselves. And so each of us, it's a really important part of bringing back the feminine, which is really important in these times. It's what's going to get us out of these times is reclaiming the feminine, which will then bring balance back. And then the masculine will come into balance as well. All things are born through the feminine. And there is a part of the prophecies, I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again, prophecies from around the world that have foretold this time that we're in right now, which is a breakdown time and a shifting and breaking down of an old paradigm, which much needs to happen, although it's not very pleasant to go through. I think we would probably all agree about that. That there is then the rebirth of the feminine, and that is, I know it from Chinese and from the Mayan and from the Native American prophecies, that there is this promise of the redemptive feminine, the return of the feminine. And so that's already been happening with people talking about the goddesses now, and so much happening, and there's a lot happening within our ceremonies, too, of the feminine rising and a lot more recognition of the feminine and people, like even in psychology, you know, in the 50s, nobody went to a counselor, and now everybody goes to a counselor, you know, not everybody, but it's a common thing for people to go to counselors and talk about their feelings, and, you know, and that was, pretty much devalued before. So in women's bodies, there are these natural pulls to spirit, the first pull is really with puberty, and that is when, and I'm going to go back to puberty in a minute and go to moon time and our menses and then go back to the importance of puberty. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. And then every time we have a moon cycle, every time we have our menses, there is a pull to spirit and an opportunity. In each of these times, there's a tremendous opportunity just naturally happening in our bodies. For us to connect to spirit and deepen in our spiritual practice and our spiritual connection, really. And then again, in menopause and certainly during pregnancy, which is an incredibly sacred time, and even though it's certainly honored in this culture, it's much undervalued still. In the 1960s and 1970s, there was a resurgence of feminine, another layer of feminism that came forward. And it was a really fabulous time. It was a very exciting time, a really awakening time. We used to have women's consciousness-raising groups where women would get together, and it was like huge for us, really recognizing the oppression that our mothers had been through and the oppression we were still struggling with. And it was really a time when consciousness was hugely, not just around the feminine and women, but just in general issues generally. So it was a very exciting time. But part of it was that women set out to prove we were just as good as men and that we could do anything that men could do. And a lot of feminist talk was about we are the same, we're no different than you. And so it was a good movement because it got us out there. Women put pants on. When I was growing up as a kid, like the only day you got to wear pants to school or it was, you know, on gym day, you know, when we had gym. When once a week we'd have gym and you got to wear pants. Otherwise, girls always wore skirts. And so it became, if you did work out in the world, you always wore a skirt. And so it became this really big deal. We could put pants on. And I remember working as a nurse, and we'd wear these white pantsuits. We made a point of wearing pants, you know. And so it was this really big deal that women could wear pants. The problem with that was that in trying to prove that we were just as good at and get ourselves out into the world and get ourselves heard is that we kind of lost the feminine. We didn't, and oftentimes really strong feminist women looked down their noses at women who had babies and stayed home with their children. So a lot of traditional women's roles, conventional women's roles, were really devalued, and much of the feminine was devalued. And some women became very over-masculinized, and that wasn't all of that. Even though we didn't bring the feminine with us in that first stage of feminism, of that wave of feminism, it was an important process for getting us out in the world. And then once many of us got out in the world, we were looking at each other going, isn't there more? What, I'm missing something. There's an emptiness in my soul. How can I, who have so much better position than my mother did, be, you know, and I'm so happy in my work. I've chosen my work. I have so many opportunities. What is this emptiness? And I remember my friend and I looking at each other and saying that. She was a very successful architect. I was an intensive care nurse, very well respected in my profession, and you know, so much, you know, heading up political things, and, you know, there was so much good going on in our lives. And we looked at each other and said, what is this emptiness? What is this emptiness? And so I was in my late 20s, then she would have been in her early 30s, I think. And then we started reading Carl Jung and getting into the goddess and all that sort of thing. We discovered that what we had lost. Was that was the emptiness, that part of our soul, the feminine side of our soul, was not being included. So that's what's coming now, and that's really exciting. It's the next wave. And it was really important that we didn't try to bring that along to begin with. We had to prove we could do anything a man could do, and we had to move into our male energy and do all of that in order to get us out in the world so the feminine could have a place. We still have a long ways to go, but we're out there and we're doing it, and we will succeed no matter what kind of backlashes and steps back there are in the collective. It's really time for the feminine to come back and stand in equality with the masculine, and for the masculine to be healed out of patriarchy, and for all of us, the male and female within both of us, within all of us. So I'm going to start talking about moon time first. Moon time is a time, and it often starts like a day or two before, when we feel kind of what we often call moony, where you just feel kind of, you know, PMS-y, oftentimes people say. Like, you just feel kind of a little more dragged down, maybe a little fluid retention, maybe a bit of a premenstrual headache, or maybe you just feel kind of more pulled inward, a little more irritable, or whatever. Or it may even just be a subtle feeling of, like, not wanting to be in the world quite as much, that sort of thing. And so, and then our menses start. And that actually is an incredibly powerful sacred time, honored in traditions throughout the world. I know it largely from my Lakota tradition, and so that's what I'm going to share it with you from. But it's very, it has differences throughout the world, but the basic premise of it is the same in indigenous cultures throughout the world, certainly the cultures that I've looked at. And that is that there's an honoring that something sacred is happening when a woman goes into that time. And we call that her sacred time, her holy time. And so that's honored. And in the old times, women would go into a moon lodge. And it part of the teaching, first of all, is for the whole community, is flexibility, because we don't often have warning. Say, oh, honey, I want to just warn you that at 2 o'clock, tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to be needing to go up to the moon lodge. No, it's not like that, you know. Sometimes she comes a little early, sometimes she comes a little late, sometimes we get that kind of feeling ahead of time for a day or two, and sometimes we don't, and we women all know that, you know. So what happens then is that, so it teaches flexibility and spontaneity within the culture. So then the woman just drops everything and goes up to the Moon Lodge, you know, to make sure the kids are taken care of and lets people know that's where she's heading. And then she's in the Moon Lodge for the few days of her menses, and usually a couple, 3 days. And then during that period of time, she doesn't cook, she doesn't take care of the kids, she's only there to meditate. It's like she's going once a month. She goes up on into the Red Tent or the Moon Lodge, and the Red Tent is a Jewish tradition. I think some of you may have read that book called The Red Tent. And the community feeds her. So the community makes sure that there's food that's taken up to her, and she's left basically just to be with spirit. So I want to talk a little bit about that and how that translates into our modern world and the things that that I see in women over the years. And one is the symptoms of PMS and the symptoms of menses that I just talked about, some of that pull to the inner, some of the irritability, the oversensitivity, what we call oversensitivity, is actually normal because the veil is actually thinner for us at that time. Something very powerful is happening spiritually, and we are actually able to feel and sense. Our intuition is hugely heightened. And so if we make ourselves available, spirit is much more available to us. There's a great cleansing happening through the cleansing of the blood. The body takes the opportunity to get rid of any toxins wherever it can. Whenever there's a discharge, whenever we breathe out, whenever we urinate, you know, all of that sort of thing. And so menstrual blood is another cleansing as well. And that also was traditionally honored. And so it was important during that cleansing also that sometimes it's a cleansing spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. And so it's also important during that cleansing, that emotional cleansing, we'll notice that really powerful emotions come up during that time that need to be released and processed and listened to. So there's an honoring about that, that that's done best and safest within that container. Because sometimes when those emotions are really strong, then and you just want some space and you're not getting it, sometimes those emotions get dumped inappropriately. And so there's a protection against that, where the woman is not going to hurt herself or someone else by, you know, just speaking out of that emotion. And so there's a great teaching in that generally for all of us in terms of what to do with our emotions generally when they come up, which is to take them into that inner sanctum. And so men and women both, whether, you know, even apart from our moon time, that ceremony, when the emotions are so strong, and we're brought into that sacred place of the Moon Lodge to be with those feelings as we're discharging them and releasing the negativity that may have mounted up over 3 weeks, there's a great teaching for us overall about emotions generally, to just first take them within and process them within, and not to act from a place of emotion, but to process them until you can get to a place of center, and then to respond rather than react out of emotion, but to respond from the place of wisdom that the emotion takes us to. The emotions themselves are very sacred. They need to be listened to. Oftentimes emotions are a messenger for us. So there's that understanding as well. Our intuition is heightened, and because for that reason our sensitivities are heightened, the veil is thinner. And oftentimes when we're doing ceremonies where people are fasting or they're getting into altered states, and to deliberately try and thin that veil in order to be able to connect with spirit more clearly. People do ayahuasca ceremonies or peyote, Native American church ceremonies for those reasons, or just even getting into a sweat lodge and getting really hot and uncomfortable in there. It pulls us into another kind of state that gets us out of our kind of normal everyday state. But what happens during that period of time is that you're breaking down the normal barriers. And so during that period of time, there has to be protection. So in many of our ceremonies, there's built-in protection for the people who are doing the dancing or for those of us that are in the sweat lodge, there's built-in protection in prayers and and so forth, and the herbs that are used and all different kinds of things. So it's the same thing for a woman on her moon time. When we come onto our menses, that's happening naturally. We are naturally going into something of an altered state. And so that has to be really protected. And so that's another reason that women seclude during that period of time. So because we're more sensitive, the things that are going on in the world are going to affect us more during that period of time. Somebody's saying a slightly negative comment or something, or we're much more likely to kind of be snippy at that time. Not all of us, but I'm speaking generally, that I see generally and that women talk about during that period of time. And actually, some of the snippiness and irritability and, like, leave me alone is normal, because we're trying to kind of put out boundaries. We're trying to set that protection that our culture doesn't have sense enough to tell us that we need to do. So there are many ways that we can work with that. First of all, just recognizing that. And recognizing that the sensitivity and the need to be alone are actually normal, are normal responses to not getting the space that we need. And although certainly the modern world is not set up in a place where we can go and just, you know, go up into a moon lodge for several days at a time, for a couple, actually people didn't stay in there for days and days, but go up there for, a day or two at a time for that sacred time, what I often have people do is just take as much time as you can to honor that period of time. Like, slow down your schedule no matter what it is. And if you're one of those people that's got a tech job or something, don't work into the evening. Take that time to really be with yourself. It's harder to do the crazier and busier the world gets. Certainly when I was first in practice and I gave this ritual to people, this prescription to people, it wasn't as difficult as it is now with people so busy. But it's important to take however much time we can and put ourselves in that moon lodge space. So if you have plans for say you've got plans on Thursday evening, and then your moon time comes, and you're supposed to go to a movie with a friend or have a date or something, reschedule and schedule in that sacred time, because there's so much available to us at that time. It's phenomenal, but it's very subtle. I mean, actually, it's usually very subtle, and it's month after month after month after sitting with that moon flow, and I'll tell you a little bit what that can look like some more. But that our intuitive, wise woman self begins to really be fed and be nourished. And certainly among the Lakota women that I know and the women that I know that are on that path, that we begin to treasure our moon time. And we don't want anybody interrupting it. We really begin to treasure the medicine of that and the space that it gives us. I remember one Comanche woman told me, a Comanche medicine woman named Black Star, who used to live here in Medford for a long time, and she said, to tell you the truth, honey, back in the old days, when we did used to have the Moon Lodge on the reservation, she said, it was really nice. So another thing that is honoring that the people recognize that traditionally with moon time is that women are on 24/7. Even when we're asleep, a part of our brain is on to listen to the baby in the next room. So we may sleep really soundly, but boy, that baby cries and we hear it. So there's a part of us that's, on 24/7. And men's brains are actually very different. Men can turn parts of their brains on and off. And so isn't that same kind of 24/7 neurological thing going on. So there's also a recognition that women really need a break. And so so that's another healing, that the kind of rejuvenating time is a time of filling up. As one woman describes it, it's like we're cleansing out these toxins. We're cleansing out physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual toxins during that period of time. And at the same time, as we cleanse out, we're filling up. And it's a great opportunity to fill up with this great spiritual wisdom that's coming to us. So I recommend women take as much time as they can during that period of time, and just to be in meditation and contemplation. And what I recommend, this is my own thing, this isn't a teaching I got from anyone except just from my own experience in Moon Lodge, is instead of meditating up on the third eye, like many traditions talk about, to meditate right over the womb and to listen to our womb, listen to the cramps if they occur, listen to the feelings that we have about our womb, about our about that part of our body, about our genitals, about our hips, about, you know, the uterus, the ovaries, how we feel about our bodies, and bringing love and to start to begin to bring healing to that, and acceptance and compassion and love, and beginning to invite the grandmothers in to help us to know the beauty and power of those, of that part of our body, and of this moon time that we're going through. And that then becomes a healing not only just for ourselves, but for all creation, because that really needs to be turned around. These parts of our bodies are a place of power as a women, as women. Our bodies are more like closer to the earth. And if you look at men's bodies, their center of power is higher up, more up in the throat chakra, and in their shoulders, they have broader shoulders, and their energy is more up, and our energy is much more down. And so our center of power is really in that first and second chakra. In a lot of traditions, you'll hear about how wonderful the upper chakras are. And you don't hear so much about how wonderful everyone's trying to get the kundalini rising up into those upper chakras. And that's true and good and beautiful. But in order for that kundalini to really rise, there needs to be a really good foundation on the earth in those first and second chakras. And those chakras are no less sacred than the upper chakras. In fact, the upper chakras are dependent on that. I think of the plant pond lily, which is a pelvic decongestant plant. The common yellow or the white pond lily is used most commonly, but I've also used the yellow pond lily as a pelvic decongestant to get the energy moving through the pelvis when things are stuck there, as like when people have various pelvic problems. And the pond lily is related to the lotus, the eastern lotus that is so revered in India and in the East. But its roots go way down into the pond and the muckiness of the pond. And it's the mucky roots, the roots in the mucky pond, like the muckiness of life, that it's those roots that feed that sacred pond lily or that sacred lotus that floats so peacefully on the surface of the pond. So that plant, I think, really has much to teach us about the sacredness and importance of sort of the muckier times of life. And our menses are like that, too. They're not nice and tidy, and they're kind of messy and mucky, just like life. And there's a beauty in that. There's an incredible beauty in that. Boy, I'm on a roll here. Lauren, would you add anything before I go on anymore?
I mean, I think you should keep rolling. You're rolling.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read you a couple things here. This is from a book called Native Healer by Medicine Grizzly Bear Lake, who's I don't want to say his tribal ancestor because I might be a little off, but I think he's from the Iroquois Nation. Anyway, he's in Northern California, and he is, the elder, sign of elder, putting glasses on to read. Anyway, his wife, who is named, hold on a second here, I should know that, terrible. I'm terrible at names, though, so give me a chance here. Taylor, I did remember, I just didn't want to get it wrong. Taylor Starhawk. This is what she says about moon time. Since nature is purifying the woman, she will be discharging contaminants, toxins, and negative energy. At the same time, however, the cosmic forces of the universe will be replenishing her with power. It is for this reason that she must isolate herself and refrain from domestic and cultural duties in order to center herself to cultivate her power. During this time, she does not want to disperse or give away her power. So this is really important because women give and give and give. It's in our nature to give, you know, and we could talk about that at length, too. But it's part of the feminine, very giving, like the earth gives and gives. And so this is a period of time that's just for us to receive, to cleanse out and receive. And oftentimes, because there's such an extroverted culture and the predominant culture, we immediately want to share something exciting. But when we have a spiritual experience or some kind of really, intense inner process, we want to hold that process and not disperse it too soon. And so that's another protection of the Moon Lodge. We're not dispersing those feelings. We're holding them within and processing them and releasing them. And we're doing our processing with spirit or oftentimes with the other women in the Moon Lodge, although very often women will just go into meditation in the best Moon Lodges that I've seen. The Moon Time this is going back to Starhawk now, Tale of Starhawk. The Moon Time is a private and personal ceremony with oneself and the Earth. As a result, it should be mystical, magical, and mysterious. It should not be looked upon with shame or considered punishment. It should not be looked upon with shame or considered punishment. The Moon Time can help a woman self-actualize herself. It can help her develop self-reliance and help develop intuitive and psychic potentials which are necessary for her survival. It is a time to cultivate her dreams, tap into her unconsciousness, and synchronize her physical, mental, and spiritual consciousness. The traditional Indian woman considers her Moon Time to be a mystical experience of enlightenment. Hence, she approaches this psychic ritual with respect and accountability. So that's kind of a different way of looking at our monthly menses from the collective. So because this time is so sacred, one must think twice about using hormones for birth control. And this may be a controversial subject with some people, but especially those hormones that at all affect the flow of menses, because we're actually interfering with our own sacred power. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to menopause. I've always said the same thing about menopause, too. And having sat with this incredible feminine medicine for so many years, and I've been very blessed to have teachers who really taught me very deeply about the Moon Time and about the sacredness of the female body. And because of those teachings, as a naturopath, I really have avoided using hormones with people. And I treated women through menopause I'm semi-retired now, but no women that were ever in my practice ever needed hormones. There's those women who choose to do hormones, but none of them ever needed hormones. Everything, in terms of prescribing herbs and homeopathics and nutrition and counseling with women and looking at their whole, you know, person, just I was able to often help people through menopause and through things like really intense heavy bleeding and menstrual cramps and so forth, utilizing just the therapies from nature, homeopathy and herbal medicine primarily, and as well as nutrition and basic sorts of things. And for some women who were open to it, many women I would talk to about Moon Time and the importance of that. So I have some hesitation about a lot of the hormone use that really regulates our and affects our flow, because it's also affecting the flow of that real powerful spiritual and emotional the emotional and spiritual things that come through. Many of us would like to escape our emotions, but I can tell you when we escape our emotions, we're escaping our power. Because within our emotions, there is a tremendous amount of power locked up if we can take that time to sit with them. Now, there are sometimes when emotions are overwhelming because of endocrine stress and liver toxicity and various kinds of things. And so it's not like I expect people to just sit with their emotions and, you know, oh, just process it. No, it's never been like that. We've always had ceremonies to help people get through things, and sometimes people are picking up, especially women are picking up emotions that even aren't even ours, that are put on us or that we're picking up from the collective, that are bigger than we can process. And so there has to be an honoring about that. And flower essences can be helpful, herbs can be helpful, homeopathy can be hugely helpful, and our ceremonies are very helpful. Moon Time can be one of those ceremonies that's very, very helpful. Sometimes if people are really in a bad place with emotions, or there's a lot of traumatic, you know, past trauma and so forth, that's really flaring things up, or just things in the collective, like what's going on in the world right now that are overwhelming, then sometimes there will be specific ceremonies that are done by a medicine person or by a community to help and clear those kinds of things. So, anyway, I had been treating women in this way for many years, and nobody had any complaints. Everybody was doing fine, by the way. It's not like people were suffering because I was refusing to give them hormones. It wasn't my business anyway. If people chose to choose hormone, that was not my business to judge them or to say anything, and it still isn't. but I'm just sharing with you my perspective in what I see in terms of the spiritual energy and so forth and interfering with that. So then I'd been doing this for some years when I read a study that, and I wish I had a copy of that study, forgive me, I don't, you'll just have to trust me on my memory. And they found that women who took hormones during their menopause did not have, they skipped some kind of spiritual development that the other woman experienced. So I think that's important, that there was some, this was just something in a study that was recognized. That, what do you know, they're catching up with us. So there's some really important things that are happening there. I want to read a little bit. I have another thing that I had set aside here to read as well. It's just going to sort of reiterate some of what I'm saying. And this is actually from my own book, Practical Wisdom in Natural Healing. And I was like reading it over just to see if there was something I wanted to say that I wasn't thinking about. And I was like, oh my goodness, I wrote this pretty well. Maybe I should just read this instead of talking off the top of my head. So I'm going to say that it's going to kind of be re-saying some of the same things, but I'm going to read this to you. For women, the inner worlds of emotional, intuitive, and mystical experience have a doorway in the physical realm of the menstrual cycle, from the earliest prepubescent awakenings of menarche through every menstrual cycle and precious pregnancy we carry into the final transition of menopause. Our cycles keep us intimately connected to the earth by keeping us connected to our earth bodies and moving us back into our earth bodies and changing our relationship and healing our relationship and grounding our relationship with our earth bodies, providing us with untold abundance of opportunity for spiritual unfolding that is grounded in the natural processes of our bodies. And then I talk about, again, how because we are naturally more open during our menses, there's more sensitivity to external and negativity in the environment. And the Moon Lodge often offers us such great protection for that. I think the other things I was going to read, I've already said ad infinitum. So one of the things that I recommend that women do, just generally, is to keep a little 1-ounce bottle of St. John's wort oil in the bathroom, like near your toothbrush, and to just put a drop over the uterus twice a day, morning and night, with a prayer for protection for this part of our bodies. And this is never more important than it has been because of so many neuroendocrine disruptors that are also interfering, so many toxins and so forth that are affecting both men and women's reproductive organs. But also women, it's not that men don't experience it too, but women have we have a lot of sexual energy coming at us all the time, much of it unwanted, and not all of it positive, as we all know. And so the St. John's wort can be very helpful. Doing that on an ongoing basis and developing a relationship with that plant in that way, will bring spirit through, and its own spirit is very powerful, cleansing and healing and protective, specifically in the sexual sphere, in the reproductive sphere. So I've had quite dramatic experiences with that herb in being protective in that sphere, and I'll tell you a story in a minute. In fact, I should tell you another moon time story as well. And so I recommend that women do that twice a day. You can use more. In Europe, women on moon time used to use St. John's wort oil and rub it on the labia for spiritual protection while they were bleeding. In the understanding, so this is coming out of Europe now, same kind of thing, in the understanding that that we are more sensitive and that we need that extra protection at that time, that we're much more open during that time. I had a patient when I was in practice, in full-time practice. I keep saying when I was in practice like it was a path. But this was a fairly strict Christian woman. She kind of went her own way. She wasn't, like, following any specific path, but she was very, very much, like, pretty strict about her beliefs, a bit on the rigid side, I guess you might say. Very strong, I would say. Strong-minded is probably better about her beliefs. And she had the menses from hell. I never saw anything like it. She finally let me do an ultrasound, and she had polycystic ovaries, which didn't surprise me at all. But she would go into PMS 2 weeks before menses, and she would, like, you know, and it was the most horrible PMS I'd ever seen. And then she And then her menses were another nightmare where she just collapsed, and she just had this horrible bleeding and this horrible cramping. I don't know how she put up with it, except she was just very, very strong. And so I was working with her, and she eventually totally came out of that with naturopathic therapies, and she did really well. She was one of my favorite people to work with. But at one point, I knew her well enough that I said to her, you know, among the Lakota, we have this practice where we feel like where women kind of take themselves. I told her a little bit about the Moon Lodge, and I said, you know, and we feel like women are more able to hear God when we're on our periods. And she said, and she practically jumped across the room at me, and she said, I've always known I could hear God better when I was on my period. And I was like, whoa. So this is from a completely different tradition and just her total intuition. And she'd always had that feeling and never dared say it out loud because everyone would think she was crazy, right? So anyway, so that was a great affirmation that I wanted to share with you. And then I also want to tell you a story. When I first heard one of the elders, I was in my 20s. I must have been like 30 or something. No, I don't know. Anyway, somewhere around in there, around my Saturn return there. I remember hearing the elders talking about how this is your sacred time, and I wasn't raised with these teachings, and that this is our sacred time, and we just flush it away, and we don't value it, you know, in the predominant culture. And I thought, what are they talking about? This is sacred? This is a time of power? I could never thought about my menses as a time of power. I'd always been raised to believe, you know, that we were weaker then, you know, and which is in itself tells us something. It's like being receptive is seen as weak, or being sensitive is seen as weak. I'll tell you, nobody accuses me of being oversensitive anymore without getting the head taken off. And somebody did try it some years ago, and I just, you know, lit into her. And I said, my sensitivity is my power, and it's what makes me, it's what feeds my intuition, helps me to see. I see what's there. Don't you be telling me, and the way she backed down. So, and bless her, she was a really good friend. She's just fiery, and so am I, so it worked well. And then we went out riding together. It just speaks again to how so much that's tied up with menses is devalued in the culture, like the emotions that come up that need to be listened to, the receptivity, the vulnerability. Like, we're more physically vulnerable at that time. We're more psychically vulnerable. But spiritually, that's a gift. So we have to turn that back around again. So anyway, I didn't have a clue about what that could possibly mean. And that was like mind-boggling to me when I heard one of the elders say that. So I went to my altar and I prayed and I said, Great Spirit, you know, I don't have a clue what this is about. I'm asking you, please, in my next message, if you would please show me what that power is. Give me a taste of that power. So I don't even know what that is, you know. And I said, and please make it really obvious because I'm pretty new at this stuff. So the next time I came on my moon time, I happened to be traveling up. I came a few days earlier, and just before I came on, I was traveling up with two men to go to a conference in Portland. I was living down here in Southern Oregon, and I was traveling with two other naturopaths to go to a homeopathic conference. I thought those two men walked on water. They are both very wonderful men. But they were like my heroes because they were both homeopaths and naturopaths, and I was just discovering homeopathy and naturopathy. And so I was just gaga. I just doted on every word they said, and I was in the back seat while the two of them were talking shop all the way up and to Portland in a five-hour drive. And I was really just doting on every word they said. And then we get into the conference, and I'm doting on every word that this teacher, Dr. Iziaga from Argentina, teaching us homeopathy. And I was doting on his every word. And then the next day, I suddenly came out of my moon time, and suddenly I felt really, like, sort of pulled down and heavy, and I had to focus, like, work to focus on what the teacher was saying. He wasn't nearly as interesting. I thought he had gotten kind of more boring, and in the middle of this, trying to focus and feeling kind of sleepy, I suddenly had a picture out of the blue of seeing us run out of gas on the way home. And I thought, that's weird. Why am I thinking that? And I kind of just shook it out of my head, and I went back to listening to the lecture. And then on the way home, I was in the back seat again, and the two men were talking shop, only this time I didn't think they were a bit interesting. I wondered how they could possibly be in their intellect like that all the time. And I just thought they were so boring and so, like, yeah. And they hadn't changed. It was me who had changed. I was in a much more inner, intuitive place. and not in my intellectual brain. And in this culture, we really so value the intellect, and we don't invalue that more diffuse consciousness, the intuitive consciousness, nearly like we do that quick intellect. So, but anyway, hadn't figured that out. I was just having my experience and feeling really pulled in, and I hadn't pulled that together yet either with my moon time until later. But we're driving along, and I'm in my state, and suddenly one of the man who's driving said, "Oh, we're out of gas." I said, "What? We're out of gas?" I said, "Oh, my gosh!" And I just came so excited and so unglued because I had seen we were coming out of gas, and I suddenly got what the power of our moon time was. And anyway, I was, I was an excited, like, over-emotional woman, and the other man turned back and said, it's all right, we're at the crest of a hill, so all we have to do is just, like, glide down into, there's a gas station right down there, we're right at the, there's a ramp off, I mean, Creator really set it up perfectly. There was an off-ramp right there, and we just crested right into the gas station. It was no big deal. No inconvenience on anyone's part for me to have this great experience. But that really sold me. It was such a dramatic experience, and I'm ever grateful to Great Spirit for making it so obvious to me what the incredible power of our moon time is. It's a great time to develop our intuition. Any stories you'd like to share, Lauren?
None that are coming to me just yet, but I'll chime in if I think of one.
Okay, because I know you teach this medicine too. So one of the things I found in my practice is that the more that we can honor our bodies, and especially these cycles, the much more opportunity we'll have for healing, because we're not blocking spirit anymore. We're not blocking the flow of life. We're not blocking the flow of our emotions, which is part of the flow of life. We're not trying to be really busy and ignore spirit trying to come through. So, and one of the things that I've definitely seen is, although I have great herbs for dysmenorrhea, painful menstrual cramps, and treating painful I haven't ever seen a case really heal without Moon Lodge. And with regular use of honoring the moon ceremony, and again, it can just be like any time that you can, taken apart to really give time to yourself. Whatever we can do in this modern world, we're stuck with what we're stuck with, and so we have to flex. But that's part of the moon ceremony as well. So that really the dysmenorrhea, the menstrual cramps don't really seem to go away unless women are able to do that, able to take that time. And then it really seems like it eases away pretty quickly, and women are able to begin, after some months, go off the herbs that they couldn't get off of and that sort of thing. So I feel like it's just really essential. Are there any questions? I've been kind of rattling on for a while. Questions, comments, anybody? Tina, maybe you've seen some cases. Lily, maybe you've had some experiences or some teachings that you'd like to share from the Lakota Way or the Red Road.
This is Tina. I think most of my patients have been Crohn's. I don't, for some reason, the Crohn's are coming to me rather than the women in the more fertile years. So I don't have a lot of experience clinically, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I know. I love the Crohn's.
Well, that's good, because I apparently am one of them now.
And me too, so.
Well, maybe we should talk a little bit about that part of life. So this is also...
Hey, Dancing Crouch.
Yeah.
This is Lauren. I will echo some of the stuff you said. One thing that I've really found to be profound, both within myself and, like, I mean, really just like, I can think of even like a few miraculous stories, is just that simple ceremony of listening to the womb. You know, I love how you say and how you said that, like, when a woman's bleeding, that it's like the veil lifts. And a way that I have found that show up for myself is like when the veil lifts, it's like I can't hide from myself. And so that can be really magical and sacred and open up the intuition and all that, but it can also tell some really hard truths that maybe the rest of the month, you know, I can avoid or not listen to. But once it gets time to the moon time and that veil lifts, like, I can't, you know, I can't hide from those truths. So I feel like I've experienced and seen some of the most powerful transformation and healing of, like, the PMS symptoms and the menstrual discomfort and severe cramping just from, like, listening to the womb. And so how I do that and how I have women do that is really just, like, while you're bleeding, put your hands on your womb and drop your consciousness down and say, what do you have to say? What are your messages? Especially powerful when there is acute cramping happening, or any other, like, kind of body symptoms, just, like, dialoguing and listening with the body symptoms. And the messages that come up can be, like, all over the place. Like, I mean, I've heard when I've been in that conversation, like, you're eating too much chocolate or you need to clean your diet up. I've also heard, like, you know, this relationship that's in your life is not good for you, or this, your power is leaking from this place, or you need to change up, you know, this job or whatever. And so really, like, being committed to that listening, can get the energy flowing. So, and I mean, yeah, like, I can think of one woman as an example who had, she just had, like, severe, I mean, like, crippling. I think she would even, you know, she, to the point of vomiting every time she was on her moon, just from one session of, on one moon time of putting her hands on the womb and just listening. And the message that came completely cured her of that. And taking, you know, listening to that message and taking good action on it, of that cramping. So, yeah. And then the flip side of that too, is the messages, you know, it doesn't have to just be when there's pain or cramping or whatever, but just taking that time to listen to the womb can also, give, you know, just powerful messages about what is wanting to be created in, you know, a woman's life moving forward, and, like, tapping into that creative power of the womb. So yeah, just that, like, simple act of listening, I find, can really keep the energy flowing, whichever way it needs to flow.
Thank you. That was great. They really told you you're eating too much chocolate?
Yeah, I have been told that by my womb.
Oh, gosh.
And now, talk about commitment.
That's
to listening.
Sad.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah, so thank you. Powerful. So I want to go back to puberty. I know we're going to get to elders here, but I want to go back to puberty and talk a little bit about that. So, but you have to understand the fullness and importance of the moon time. So if we go back to puberty, then that is our first moon. And puberty is a really a powerful time. As we all know, unfortunately, our culture does not know how to support adolescents. And it's really unfortunate. We often laugh at them and make jokes about their raging hormones. But in wiser cultures and wiser times, it still happens in on this continent, in on the reservations, and among those people following the old ways. There are puberty rituals that in which the young person, the person has been prepared for a long time, long before puberty. It's not like they're suddenly, these teachings are not suddenly, you know, revealed to them. But they're much, the teachings are really shared much more intensively. And the person is very much celebrated. And so at this point, we're talking about the girls. And so a girl becoming a woman is very much celebrated, and there's an honoring of that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Navajo ceremony of a puberty ceremony, which is the one I'm most familiar with, probably from working with Annie Kahn, who was it was a part of the Blessing Way ceremony that she was involved in. She's a Navajo medicine woman that I worked with for many years. Very blessed to work with her. She was quite an amazing person. Anyway, in that ceremony, it's a four-day ceremony, and the Navajo do these no-sleep ceremonies. And so she does not sleep for 4 days and four nights on that first ceremony. Actually, when a girl is born, people start preparing for that ceremony from the moment she's born, is from what I've heard. So it's considered a very, very key and very important ceremony. Traditionally, the Navajo has been a very woman-oriented ceremony. And the women are still the landowners. And if a woman wants to divorce a man, she just puts his shoes out on the front porch, and that's the message he gets. He's out. No argument. So it's a much more, traditionally, and it's still there as well. You can really feel the power of the grandmothers. I can really feel the power of the grandmothers whenever I go onto that land. It's really incredible. So it's a four-day ceremony, and one of the things that happens in that ceremony is the woman is seen that the changing woman, who is the creatrix, who is in that cosmology, if you will, changing woman is the deity, if you will, and you might call her the goddess that creates all, and so changing woman is the primary deity, we'll say. The language is always kind of odd, but so during puberty, during that first menses, that woman is seen. That young woman is seen as being an incarnation of changing woman, to the degree that people who attend the ceremony line up for her to put her hands on them to heal them. Can you imagine that you go on your first moon and you're treated like a goddess? What that would do to one's psyche. The other thing that happens during that ceremony, the jewelry, the silver and turquoise jewelry, is very precious to the Navajo people, and people bring their jewelry for the young woman to wear throughout the ceremony because they feel like it's a tremendous blessing. So here's this woman on her moon time, and it's seen as a tremendous blessing. The other thing she does is she runs like a certain distance every day. So there's another thing that's built into a lot of these traditional ceremonies, which builds strength. So sometimes to the modern world, some of the traditional ceremonies seems kind of unusually harsh. Like, why would you deprive her of sleep for 4 days or for 4 nights? Because it helps her to be closer to spirit. It's one of those things that that when we deprive ourselves of all these normal things, it gets us out of normal consciousness and makes us more susceptible to spirit, and so the blessings are able to come through. Changing woman's able to come through more clearly. But the other thing is that the traditional ceremonies teach strength and endurance. And as life goes on, when we go through these kinds of ceremonies, those of people who have been part of our traditional ceremonies know this, that then when you come through a hard time in life, those ceremonies stay with you. All those times that you were out there fasting and dancing, or those times when you endured through a sweat lodge that you thought was going to kill you because it felt so hot. Those kinds of things make us really, really strong. And I see a real difference in that in the predominant culture and in the native culture. The strength, the kind of inner strength that people gain from the ceremonies is really powerful. So that's part of what's going on there. But the important thing I want to share is how honored she is, really, as a living goddess. And she's really... The changing woman is coming through her at that time, and that is acknowledged. The other thing is that some of the Navajo people noticed that, the children were taken, kidnapped from the reservation. It was the government in league with the church, in case you thought that only happened in the burning times. This happened from 1870s up until the 1940s. So for, well onto 70 years, children were taken off the reservation and put into boarding schools, often several states away. They were often really treated very badly. Sometimes they got to go home for the summers. Sometimes they did not. Sometimes they never saw their parents again. It was really severe. But the elders noticed over the ensuing years that the girls who were not home, who did not have their first moon at home and were able to get their ceremony, had more problems in childbirth and more reproductive problems than the young women who had the ceremony. So that really says something about the importance of ceremony and connecting with spirit and honoring spirit within our body. So I wanted to share that and how important that is. So there's much that we can do for our daughters and our granddaughters in terms of recreating a ceremony, and it may not be appropriate for us to do such a challenging ceremony in our culture, but some kind of ceremony where we really honor that time is really, really important. And we have to retrain ourselves about the hormones that are what we call the raging hormones, the hormonal changes are a new kind of power coming through for both men and for women. And there's many teachings about how to handle that kind of emotional power that comes through, the intuitive power that comes through. There's a tremendous subtle power that comes through women at that time that wasn't there before, and a different kind of power that comes through men. So there's an understanding of how women can and teachings of how women can really overwhelm men with our emotions. Their brains aren't built for it, as we now know scientifically. And men are taught to, like, you know, hold back. The way you are with the guys is not how you are with the women. Their brains are different. That's what we know now scientifically. But the women are different. Like, the people knew that just from observation, from, seems to me, like common sense. But, you know, they didn't need all these studies to see the obvious. So, excuse me for being a bit irreverent, but sometimes it does get tiresome watching science catch up with ancient peoples and then take all the credit. Talk about appropriation. But I think any kind of recognition and any kind of retraining ourselves to understand and appreciate the huge shifts that are going on and be able to support that. I often think about menarche and menopause as being like spring and fall. And if you think about the weather in spring, one day it's bright and shiny, and the next day it's pouring rain, and then you have a tumultuous thunderstorm, or you have tumultuous winds, and then it's bright and sunny. And then in fall, it's the same thing. One day it's really warm and beautiful, and the next day it's snowing, and then the wind is blowing. And, you know, and summer tends to be more steady, and winter tends to be more steady. But there, those changing seasons, those in-between times of spring and fall, really correspond a lot to the spring of our life really is menarche in adolescence, and then the fall of our life really is menopause. And those are tumultuous times of great change. So moving ahead to menopause, there's another pull to introversion there. It's not as strong and it's more subtle, but it's really important, again, to take some time and really meditate. I remember one friend who was going to through menopause at the same time as me. We both felt it. I said, it feels like the grandmothers are putting building blocks of wisdom in my body. And she said, yeah, I feel the same way. It's like they're putting building blocks of wisdom in my body. Like there's some wisdom physically being placed into the body. So it's another time of changing. We're moving out of reproductive years and into our crone years, a time of wisdom. And if we can't really act as the wisdom keepers if we're not not in those inner realms available to that wisdom. So there's a time, oftentimes that can be a 3 to 5 year process. So it's not like you're going to go in a moon lodge for 5 years. That's absurd. But there is like more paying attention and moving within and paying attention to what the body's saying and what's happening through the body. One of the common symptoms, by the way, the only normal symptom of menopause is cessation of menses. Everything else is an imbalance. And so I'll add to it a slight pull to introversion and a cessation of menses. And as one woman described it in Africa, some anthropologists were questioning her about what was menopause like in your culture, and the women are looking at these anthropologists going, what are you talking about? And finally, one of the women says, oh, that. Well, you know, she comes every month, and then she starts coming less often, and she comes less and less often, and then she just stops coming. Like, what's the problem? And various writers have said that that women in indigenous, more indigenous cultures have way less hot flashes and way less emotional lability, way less problems than women in more developed cultures. So a lot of the symptoms that we're having are really an imbalance and due to the fact that we have not claimed the spiritual power. And it's also due to the not only the denigration of the feminine generally, but how the denigration of the earth as well as the earth bodies and what that has resulted in and all the neurotoxins. And so by the time we come into menopause now, our livers are more toxic than our ancestors. And so the extra surges of, you know, the ovaries, they kind of go, whee, and put out a bunch of estrogen, and they go, oh, I don't know if I want to do that anymore, and then they stop for a while, and then they put out a surge of estrogen. And normally, you wouldn't even feel that if your liver is functioning up to par. you just wouldn't even feel that because your liver would just say, whoa, there's a little bit extra work to do, pick it up and take care of it, and there's no need to be having hot flashes. Hot flashes are really, in my experience, a liver symptom, and that kind of fits the Chinese medicine perspective of it as well. The other organ I look at primarily that seems to get affected is the adrenals. The adrenal cortex, which is the outer part of the adrenal gland, really normally puts out a small amount of estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and various other hormones. And so when the ovaries retire, the adrenal cortex just keeps up and up so that everything goes smooth and happy and everything's fine. But our adrenal cortexes are very stressed, again, from electromagnetics and the high stress and the high amount of stress that we're under that's so abnormal, our separation from nature and the flows of nature and not only the cycles, but the timing of nature. We're just rushing around and so forth. It's crazy. And the clocks that we're on and all of that. We're just so out of touch. And that's a stress on our diurnal rhythms, which relates to the adrenal cortex, and then all the toxins that are so hard on the whole endocrine system generally, and the HPA axis, the pituitary, and the hypothalamus, which are all related and interacting with the adrenals. So looking at the whole endocrine system. So as a naturopath, you know, as a spiritual woman, I certainly look at that need to honor. And oftentimes, if women just begin to honor the feelings and the hot flashes and the body things and listen and do the same kind of thing we do in moon time, then oftentimes symptoms will begin to resolve. As a naturopath, I look at really nourishing those organs, nourishing and cleansing the liver as much as I can, and supporting the adrenal glands. And I usually start that as women get into their late 40s in preparation for menopause anymore. And these days, I also often give a lot of seaweed to help to protect the thyroid. I never used to see thyroid problems in menopause. And then I began to see, around the beginning of the millennium, I began to see more and more that I had to support women's thyroids as well, or women would tend to get a little hypothyroid. And that there's nothing normal about that in menopause. So, or at any time, for that matter. But the other thing, just speaking about it spiritually, is paying attention and listening to the symptoms that come up, and the hot flashes being a very primary one, listening to those hot flashes. The hot flashes have been described by many writers, including myself, as flushes of power. And it's fire. It's flushes of heat. It's flushes of power. And so to listen to that and to just, again, move in and feel that hot flash and feel into it and listen and say, how are you serving me? And like Lauren was talking about, doing that dialogue and listening. And oftentimes there's much to learn there about how to move into a different kind of power, how to take our power in a good way. And power is not power over. It can be just the power to stand in my own knowing and just within myself, never even opening my mouth. Just the power to know my own beauty, the power of my own connection with Creator, and not letting anyone take that from me. That is the most essential power. And that's an inner power, an inward power, that nobody can take any part of myself, or nobody can, nobody can invalidate me. So I have a great story about that. I was giving a lecture on this one time, and just on menopause itself, actually. And there was a woman, and I talked about hot flashes and as surges of power and so forth. And one woman said, well, that's all very well, she said, but, you know, I just get these sudden surges of irritability that I've never had before. She said, it's just not okay. I said, well, give me an example. She said, well, for example, I was playing a board game with my son, and he would not put the dice back in the cup after his turn. And I said, would you please put the dice back in the cup? And he just wouldn't put the dice back in the cup. And I said, would you please put the dice back in the cup? I said it a couple more times, and he didn't. And she said, and then all of a sudden I just lost it, and I yelled at him, put the dice back in the cup! She said, it was terrible! I said, oh. I said, and then what happened? Did he put the dice back in the cup? She goes, oh, yes. So sometimes somebody once said estrogen betrays us a little bit and that it makes us nice. And oftentimes you hear there's kind of a reputation for crones that we're a little more fiery, And actually, that's actually an appropriate thing that happens actually in our bodies. And so the hot flashes come up because we live in a culture in which our fire is suppressed. And it's not nice to, you know, raise your voice. You mustn't do that, you know. So we don't often set boundaries for ourselves because we never go to that. You know, she did appropriately, like she said it nicely, and then she said it nicely, and then she said it nicely, and finally she said, "Excuse me, young man." So that's an appropriate expression of power. It's not like you want to just take people's heads off. Again, and oftentimes it's just in our energy. It's like the minute you're not willing to tolerate some kind of inappropriate, disrespectful behavior, however subtle it is, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, people will sense that in your energy, and you never have to raise your voice. And that's personal power. See, I was going to say something else, and it fled my mind. Part of the problem. I make all these notes and I never look at them. I don't know why I bother to do that. But yeah, anything anybody would add? Gina, would you add anything about that? Oh, I remember.
Oh, this is Tina. So, you know, I was also thinking about the emunctories, you know, as far as a physical naturopathic thing goes, and in menopause. And so, of course, we don't have that primary emunctory of the menses anymore. So, of course, we need to have some other kind of discharge.
Yeah.
Whether it's yelling at somebody or just like standing in front of the line, interlocked arms with other crones at a protest, and calling people out. So.
Yeah. Yeah, the voice of the crone is, yeah. In traditional societies, you know, the elders are very much valued, and the female elders, the women elders are very much valued. But when we have all those moon times in which we learn how to contain our emotions and express them from a place of center, then we're much more prepared for that power when it comes to us through menopause. Yeah. Yeah, it's appropriate. Women, the wise women need to stand up and say, "Excuse me. We need to bring things back to balance here, whether it's in protest or whatever." I had one patient who came in. She was really fiery, and she was having terrible hot flashes. And I happened to be going through menopause at the same time. And I said, "You know, let me just tell you," I said, "just see if this fits for you." I said, "But in my experiences, the only time that I have a hot flash is if I'm having some patriarchal energy put on me and pushed on me. And then it's like this, my body just flashes up, you know, it's like, and that's the only time I have a hot flash." And her eyes got really big, and she said, "Oh." And, you know, if she ever had a hot flash again, I don't think she told me. Her hot flashes went way down as soon as she recognized that and began to deal with that patriarchal energy that was going on with a business partner, and how she then made some decisions to deal with it, and her hot flashes totally decreased. So yeah. Any other questions or comments?
I had a question. My question is, with great honor to the feminine, wanting to understand the balance with masculine and feminine, also in men and in boys, thinking of my son, who's 9 years old, who, out of everyone in the family, I see the most intuitive sensitivity in him. And just wondering in this conversation, like, what happens to that for him? And then also just being at a time in my life where I'm finding myself connecting with one or two men in a very sort of feminine way. And just wondering about that, like, where that falls in this conversation.
Okay, that's a very good question. And it's a whole another topic, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the things I will say, first of all, I'm going to recommend a couple books for you. They're both written by a psychologist in Spokane named Michael Gurian, which is G as in George, U-R-I, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, Michael Gurian.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
His, the two books I'm going to, he may have many more books out right now, but the ones I'm familiar with are, one is called The Wonder of Boys, and the second one is called A Fine Young Man. A Fine Young Man is the one about adolescence.
Okay.
Yeah. And I can't recommend those books enough. There are other men writers also, but he's been the one that I think is the clearest, and just really, I recommend everybody read those books.
Okay.
We both have masculine and feminine within us, and we both have to integrate both of those parts. I've been focusing on the feminine tonight, but we both parts are really, really important in both of us. And the masculine is that external, more getting things done, doing things, you know, thinking, intellect, control as opposed to flowing and allowing. And we need the balance of both. The thing about boys also really need their ceremony at puberty. It's very powerful what young men go through, you know, becoming boys to men. There needs to be an honoring of that voice changing. My grandson just turned 13, and he's, you know, as his voice is changing, it's like he went through that embarrassment and all that sort of thing. It's so sad. It's like so sacred. Why isn't there a place for him to, I really wanted to be able to bring him into ceremony at this time with some of the elders, but that has not, you know, COVID and everything is not helping. All the circumstances, for some reason, Creator's not making that happen. But really, that's another thing that should be honored. It should be celebrated. Boys should be prepared for that, as girls should be prepared for that first menses for a long time beforehand. Boys should be prepared for what's happening. And, you know, the sexual urges that are coming through should be talked about. Men should be talking to the boys. Women should be talking to the girls, obviously, whenever possible. But in men's ceremonies, from what I've read about them, it's very different. There are much more warrior ceremonies. There's much more challenging going on. The men, in some of the ceremonies, the men, Martine Prechtel talks about this actually quite delightfully, you know, where the, he said, you know, they go and they wrench the boy from their mothers, and their mothers are, you know, crying out, oh my gosh, you know, and the grandfathers wrench the boys and take them away from the women, and the women are crying, oh, you're taking my little boy away, and, you know. And then Martine says, you know, no big deal. We're just taking them a little ways away into the woods over there. It's not that far, you know. But it's the importance of that, wrenching them away from the women so that they can become men. And one of the other writers, Robert Bly, talks about how what's happened in our culture is because we're lacking that ceremony, men don't ever really bond to men. And we see that. Men don't really kind of know how to bond with one another. I mean, many men do, but it's really amazing how men don't bond with one another. And male bonding is very different than female bonding. Oftentimes, Michael Gurion talks about this, how men bond out on the basketball court. You know, they process their feelings in a very different way. And you can actually emasculate them by asking them to talk about their feelings too much. So, going back to Robert Bly talks about the fact that the lack of the ceremony and that wrenching of the boy from the women, ceremonially taking them from the women, really, they don't ever move from seeing women as their mothers. They go from their mothers to their girlfriends to their wives without ever making a real significant transition, without having the teachings about how to really become a man. They don't get initiated into becoming a man. Again, women's bodies initiate us into becoming a woman. And not that all of us are all that great at it because of our lack of ceremony, there are lots of problems, but at least our bodies do it for us, and we're closer to our bodies and closer to the earth, we move into it more readily, in my experience, whereas men, actually, they kind of get lost. Their masculinity really never gets developed without that outer mentor. So, Michael Gurion, I think, is a really good source for you. So one of the things we often see is a devaluation of the masculine, actually. And we, more forward-thinking, supposedly forward-thinking cultures, I don't know, more educated cultures, let's say, that we often really praise men for being the feminine. You know, oh my gosh, he's so feminine, he's so in touch with his feminine, and I remember after working in rural America for several years, where I had my full-time practice for so many years, going to Portland and then teaching in Portland, and people would say, "Oh, he's so feminine," or "He's so in touch with his feminine." I go, "Oh my God, is he a man? Does he have his masculine?" And it's because a lot of times there's not that understanding of the differences between the masculine and the feminine. And there's obviously people that are in between, people who are gay and people who are transgender and all, and that's a whole different subject, just as sacred, no less important. But what we're talking about tonight is basically these real the differences between men and women. So it's important that the masculine be honored, and I'm hoping those books could help you. So say more about that, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate that those names very much, and. Yeah, I guess I was wondering, and I'll just keep sitting with it, like about the feminine connect, that in men who are very aware and wanting to, and recognizing that the culture and are pained by that the dominant culture is patriarchal, and wanting to, raise the feminine in themselves and in women in general, and recognize that, like that. I'm just curious about that, like because I know several men like that. And
it's beautiful and it's essential. And they also have to make sure that they don't get emasculated in the process by, you know, by really the kind of values. Like, we don't value. I don't know. When I think about the cowboys that I used to hang out with, you know. And they were just so much more naturally in their masculine, you know. And it gets sometimes annoying sometimes, and they could kind of handle a woman or not. Sometimes really beautiful, you know. But it's just I'd have to think about it to describe it, because I just have like a kind of a visceral difference in experience. But how much easier they are in being men. They just seem more like men. And yes, in those cultures, a lot of times it gets out of line and it's abusive and whatever. But I've also known a lot of men who are very respectful of the feminine, who are, you know, and it gets labeled, it just gets labeled as like redneck or something. And there are some things as rednecks, but we've lost something where we dismiss all of that. We've lost something of the masculine, just like we dismiss emotions. And it's not like there can't be women that are manipulating with their emotions and being perpetual victims and going on and about, I feel, you know, that's like the other side of it, and can give the feminine a bad name. Well, it's the same thing. Like, we have to go back into what we reject in the masculine, what we reject in patriarchy, and figure out how to reintegrate that in a good way. And that's especially a task for men. And I remember when I was really working with my own male side with that, and then raising a male horse who was didn't realize he wasn't a stallion. He was so male, and so high energy, and such a free spirit, and so fiery. I really just had this huge empathy for men trying to claim the masculine out of patriarchy, because the masculine's been so twisted. So if you look at someone like Donald Trump, who is the epitome of everything a man would not want to be in so many ways, all the things we don't like about him, we could identify them. We might say, well, he's really dominating. Well, so we reject dominating. But how do I take the quality of dominating and integrate that in a really good way without putting somebody else down? You know, that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate this last piece about claiming the masculine out of patriarchy. And yeah.
Thank you. It's a really good question. And really, it's always been my dream to have to have this man at my side teaching next to me about the masculine, which would be much more appropriate because he can teach it more from his own experience. But okay, that'll happen. I'll be teaching that workshop. But in the meantime, I'm just a woman teaching it from what I've read and what I know of men and what I've worked with men, but not as a man. And it's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Men's and women's brains are really different. Men don't have as wide a corpus callosum, and so they don't process emotions as quickly. We use our whole brains all at once, and we travel around to our different lobes really easily and quickly, so we process emotions really quickly and easily. But men do more spatial things more easily. They focus much more. They're much more naturally focused. Not that a woman can't be focused or a man can't process emotions, but there are lots of men who have wider corpus callosums, and you know, there's everything in between. But generally speaking, that men's and women's brains, their neurology is really different. So our way of seeing the world is really different. And if we know that, if we know that neurologically our perceptions are vastly different, and we come into marriage together knowing we're really different, then we can honor our differences and stay open to one another. And one of the things I'd often say to women, they'd come in and they'd say, my husband doesn't listen to my feelings, and I wanted to talk to him about this and that. And they're really trying to process their feelings with their husbands. And I would say, you know, you need to be doing that with your girlfriend. That's not what men do, you know. And there's some processing emotions that we do, just like women can do high math and all that sort of thing. And in order to develop the feminine, and certainly men can develop that, but some men have more of that skill than others, depending on their brain structure. It's actually a brain structure thing. So, you know, so honoring and understanding the things is important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kind of gone over time, I think, or maybe we're just at 8 o'clock. Any other questions before we close?
Hi, this is Candace. I have a question.
Yeah.
I have really loved this conversation. Thank you so much. And I wanted to ask real quick, if you can do it quickly, if you could speak to the process of, you know, going through puberty, the moon time and menopause for women who don't have a womb
for whatever reason. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to talk about transgender for women who don't have a womb because of uterus because of transgender, because that's a whole different topic of which I don't have personal experience enough to speak to. And so I want to respect those people by saying it's, you know, just like I don't like to talk too much about the men and the men's ceremonies and because I can speak to it somewhat, but I'm not a man, you know. So, but I did want to speak to it about, like, women who've had their uteruses removed. And I think probably one could say this about transgender women as well, is that that energy is still there. That energy is still in the pelvis. And just as we have energy in our throat chakra, in our shoulders, and in our heads to be in touch with our masculine, so too, I would think that a transgender woman could also do these same kinds of ceremonies. But certainly a woman who's had her uterus removed for whatever reason, but still that energy is still very much there in the pelvis. The masculine and feminine are within us both. So certainly anybody could meditate and get in touch with the feminine. A man would do it differently, and don't ask me how, you know. But a transgender woman could very much still move her energy down into that pelvic area and meditate there, like meditate with that first and second chakra and that connecting to the earth. And women without uteruses as well. And, you know, even postmenopausal women, we can still move into that area and meditate in that way. Does that help?
Yes, it definitely does. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions or comments?
Oh, I did want to know if we can still get your book. I tried to order it recently, and the PayPal kept doing something weird. So I don't know, is it still available on your website?
Yeah, that's weird. If you can't get through, drop me an email, or you could just send me a check, and I'll have her send you the book or something if you want.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Oh, do you know where to send me the check?
Nope.
That would help.
Yep.
1467. Or actually, maybe we'll end, and then we'll give you the address right at the end. You can just stay on a couple extra minutes.
Okay, yeah, that's totally fine. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. I'm going to end with a little bit of a song, and we'll release the spirits. You guys can sing with me if you know this song. We all come from the goddess, and to her we shall return like the drops of rain flowing to the ocean. We thank you, grandmothers, for being with us. We thank you, spirits of the four directions above and below, for being with us. We thank you, great spirit, for blessing us. And we pray that these ways, that these wisdoms can come back so there can be peace among people again, between men and women, within ourselves, the masculine and feminine within and without. And we thank you. Aum Atakriyasi, we release you safely home. The world before us is restored in beauty. The world behind us is restored in beauty. The world below us is restored in beauty. The world above us is restored in beauty. Our voices are restored in beauty. It is finished in beauty. It is finished in beauty.
It's finished in beauty. It's finished in beauty. Aum
Atakriyasi, be Aum. Okay. I'll let you all go, and I thank you so much.